This is Social Entrepreneur with Michelle Horowitz of Appetite for Change.
We went from kind of small community-based organizations doing urban farming and cooking workshops and a little bit of policy work to a social enterprise that has five lines of business.
Welcome to Social Entrepreneur. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former Fortune 500 executive, but today I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week, you'll hear exciting stories of ordinary people just like you who are making a difference. They share their successes, their failures, and what they're learning along the way. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome to Social Entrepreneur and today's guest, Michelle Horowitz. Now, I want to talk just for a second about the quality of life in Minnesota. It is an amazing place to live. My lived experience of Minnesota is phenomenal. A recruiter friend of mine said, Minnesota is one of the hardest places to recruit people to, and yet it's one of the hardest places to recruit people from. It's because of the natural beauty, the outdoor life, the active community. It's one of the healthiest states of the union. We have cosmopolitan areas with art and restaurants, low crime rates, highly educated populace, a high level of home ownership, so many Fortune 500 companies, and one of the lowest poverty rates of any state. And yet, for African Americans, the lived experience in Minnesota can be quite different. According to the Wall Street Journal, Minnesota is the second worst state from quality of life for African Americans. So higher unemployment, lower performance in school, lower graduation rate from high school, lower life expectancy, and the home ownership gap between whites and blacks, it's the second worst of any state. So these are complex problems with very deep roots. And that's not even speaking to the experience of Asian Americans, Hispanics, Native Americans in Minnesota that are quite different than mine. So my guest today is Michelle Horowitz of Appetite for Change, and she traces her journey to social change back to her Jewish upbringing. And Michelle wanted to form an organization at one point, but she was not quite clear where to begin. So she and her co-founders, they decided to get the community together over a meal. And so they brought people together, especially on the north side of Minneapolis, and all of the offerings that they have today came out of those initial conversations with the community. I'm going to let Michelle tell you this story. So here she is, Michelle Horowitz of Appetite for Change.
Hi, my name is Michelle Horowitz, and I'm one of the co-founders of Appetite for Change. We are a nonprofit social enterprise in North Minneapolis, and our mission is to use food as a tool to build health, wealth, and social change.
So what can you kind of describe what's the problem that you're out to solve?
Sure. I think as you'll learn, the organization and our response to the problem is multifaceted and really holistic. And that's really as a response to how multi-layered the problem is. So it isn't really just one thing that Appetite for Change is trying to tackle. The root, you know, that got us on the work and what got us engaged with the community and asking the community what they wanted was food access, food environment, food policy, food systems, all of that. And so North Minneapolis is an area that just has a number of challenges and barriers when it comes to accessing what we call real food. So that is like at the root of it, but because food touches so many different areas of our lives and of our communities, it's more than that. It's jobs, it's physical health and nutrition, it's you know, entrepreneurialism and jobs and wealth. So it's you know, education. Kids can't learn without, you know, having access to food. So, but I would say at the heart is the food access and the wealth and health that food provides if you use it.
Let's talk a little bit about your journey that led to Appetite for Change. So can you talk about where does this drive for social change, where does all that stuff come from? What were kind of the moments in your life that sort of shaped your mission?
I think it started really early on, just being raised by a Jewish family and in a Jewish community, and just always being really cognizant of some major injustices in the world, not just inflicted upon the Jewish people for many hundreds and hundreds of years, but to other groups that have been othered. So obviously, you know, people of color and any religious minority or any physically or mentally disabled community is always facing challenges. And I think that was just always in our home, like a message that's not okay, and that we shouldn't be satisfied with that. And so we should always be working to address it. I think like leaving Minneapolis and living in West Philadelphia during undergrad was pretty eye-opening to me, just seeing a very different environment, physical environment than where I was raised in the suburbs of Minneapolis, the western suburbs. And and then I decided to go to law school and just really got completely caught up in the historical and systematic and institutionalized oppressions that have been developed through the law. You know, so if anyone's ever read Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow, kind of that, all of that stuff really grabbed me in law school. So I worked in the criminal defense and prosecution clinics, had to give the other side a try, but ended up as a public defender in Miami-Dade County. And that was really when I both saw the connection between food and racial and social justice, but also when I was really sort of, a fire was lit to make some systematic change. Mm.
So when you were getting your undergrad degree, what were you focusing on?
So I started out as pre-med, and then I got in a terrible accident and spent time in the hospital and realized that I didn't want to be a doctor. So I used all my science and math credits and switched over to history and sociology of science, and with the concentration in bioethics. So yeah. Stem cell research, end of life care, a lot of those sort of ethical issues in medicine. I took a health law class and I said, you know what, law school is a good degree to have. I actually wanted to move to New York City and go to Culinary Institute of America. And I'd been waiting tables for about 8 years at that point, all of high school, all of college, and I wanted to work in the back of the house and work in a kitchen and be a chef. But it just, you know, it was like one of those, oh, that's a cute side dream. Like, that's not the way I was raised, and just sort of like the school I went to, it just was like, oh, that's not really something you do. So law school seems like the more practical thing, but I had that bug to always go back to cooking. And I also studied Spanish and theater. Those were my minors in undergrad. So I kind of like to do lots of different things. I love ceramics. I love art. I think culinary is like a art form, and it really engages that other side of my brain.
Right, right. So you ended up with a degree in bioethics and medical ethics, and then you came back to Minnesota. You got your JD in criminal justice. Then you go off to Miami, you're assistant public defender. When I looked at your LinkedIn profile, what I saw was, here you are, an assistant public defender in Miami-Dade, and at the same time, you're working at Michi's Restaurant. So how does that work? How are you a public defender, and you're also still doing things in a restaurant? What's going on with that?
So, you know, technology, which we were just talking about earlier, LinkedIn doesn't allow you to do like leave of absences. Mm. So I took a leave of absence from the public defender's office because I just knew if I didn't try pursuing my passion for food in a serious way, that I just would maybe regret that I never did and grew up and just kind of wondered what could have been. And because public defender salaries are so high and that work is so valued in our society, I wasn't getting paid, you know, a ton, and I love cooking. So I did some catering, small gigs just for friends and friends of friends on the side for a few months. And then I was like, I really need to just give this a more serious shot. So I took a leave of absence. I enrolled in culinary school And 2 weeks before I was supposed to start culinary school and leave my job as a public defender, I met Michelle Bernstein the day before she flew to New York City to find out if she was going to win the Outstanding Chef, Best Chef Award of the Southeast Region, which she did, and she was the first woman to win that region, that title. But I recognized her. We were getting our nails done, and I really admire you and everything you've built here and your food career. And she used to be a prima ballerina and danced professionally. So she kind of had an interesting path to how she got to food too. And she really helped me see that culinary school probably wasn't the right thing. And that I just, with all the experience as a home cook, and at that point I had been waiting tables on and off for over 12 years. And so I had a lot of front of house experience, and she just said, why don't you just work in the back of the house somewhere? And long story short, I ended up staging for her for a few months and wanted to do that full time. So took a position at Michi's restaurant in Miami and worked there for just under a year before I got pregnant. And then after a few months of pregnancy, just wasn't like the safest work environment for me. And so I went back to the public defender's office just for the remainder of my pregnancy and took maternity leave in 2010 and moved back to Minneapolis when my son was 6 months old.
Hmm. So you get back to Minneapolis. So how does a new mom, with all the challenges of being a new mom, transplanted back to Minneapolis, how does appetite for change grow out of that?
So I wanted to find a way to combine my passion for food and racial and social justice. So I just started like researching what was happening here in the Twin Cities. I had been gone for 5 years, and during law school, I was sort of under a rock. And then before that, I was in Philly. So I hadn't really lived there for a long time. And I got involved in a group called Gardening Matters. I served on their board. I was volunteer instructing cooking classes through a program at the University of Minnesota called Cooking Matters, the national program through Share Our Strengths, but it's administered locally at the extension, U of M. And then I wanted to start a nonprofit, and I didn't really know exactly how or, you know, what to do. And I started just doing professional development and learning about different ways and structures and things like that. I formed the organization and was really just going around teaching cooking classes to pregnant and new moms and folks that wanted to learn about making baby food from scratch and kids' first foods. I was kind of in that zone because my son was that age. But I met Princess Titus and Latasha Powell. And they are the co-founders with me of Appetite for Change. And it was like 6 months in, and I had really not a major plan or idea of how this was going to develop. But we decided to get the community together over cooking a meal and eating, sitting down and breaking bread together and having dialogue in North Minneapolis about what change people wanted to see in the community around food, what changes that were food connected, but not necessarily what you would think of as food issues, what changed in the community around those things, and then just personally in people's own lives, what change they wanted to see in their own relationship with food. So we developed our organization, and all of our programming has come from those initial 8 dialogues with over 250 Northsiders.
The problems that you're out to solve, they are complex. And sometimes we try to approach complex problems with simple solutions, but you didn't really take that approach. I mean, it looks to me like Appetite for Change, you have really worked towards a holistic solution related to food and social change. So can you kind of talk a little bit about the offerings that you have and how you think about sort of the whole portfolio?
Sure. So again, out of those dialogues, people really loved the coming together to cook, eat, and dialogue and build social connection within community, even within their own families. And so our flagship program became that, coming together to cook, eat, and talk. It's not rocket science. It is very simple. But the more you come together and cook, eat, and talk, the more that comes out that people want to do and change and build. So the urban farming work that we do came out of that. People wanted to grow more food. So we started a small community garden on a neighborhood organization-owned lot that was growing flowers. We converted it to veggies. And, you know, now we have seven urban farm sites that we grow food. And that really just grew, pun intended, organically out of those dialogues. Similarly, people said, well, you know, we don't understand why there's so many corner stores and why do the corner stores all sell junk? And, you know, we have one grocery store for the entire, you know, 60,000 plus population, one mainstream grocery store. And it's not even as nice as the other same chain grocery stores in other parts of town. So we started working more on the policy and advocacy and systems change work through in coalition with partners through a coalition called Northside Fresh. That became sort of our policy work. And all along, we had young people around that were telling us, you know, this is how you need to engage the youth. And no, you probably shouldn't do it like that if you want young people to show up. And they really helped us design programming for youth. They wanted their own community cooked workshop night. So we have a youth group right now that meets twice a month to cook, eat, and talk. And it's open to any young people 14 to 24. And so the youth employment program really grew very naturally out of the young people that we started with that invited their friends and their family and, you know, people to just sort of join the work. And as we grew and got additional funding through mostly public support at that time, we were able to hire some youth as actual employees. And then the opportunity came to come into our space that we're in now, 1200 West Broadway Avenue on Fremont and Broadway. And that there was a commercial kitchen, shared commercial kitchen that was operating already called Kindred Kitchen. And we had heard from a lot of community members that people wanted to start their own food businesses. They wanted the space and resources and support to do that. Kindred Kitchen had been operating for a few years and it was managed by the landlord of the building, and they were ready to turn that over to a community-based organization. So they actually reached out to us and said, you know, would you be interested in taking over this kitchen? And then, by the way, next door, there's a vacant space that, you know, we want to be a restaurant. And, you know, it had been empty for quite a while. They were trying to make it a restaurant, but we're having trouble getting, a business to locate there. So we built out Breaking Bread. We moved into this building in 2014. We built Breaking Bread out and opened in 2015. And we still run Kindred Kitchen as well. We went from kind of small community-based organizations doing urban farming and cooking workshops and a little bit of policy work to and systems change work to a social enterprise that has five lines of business. I mean, we do our cooking workshops on a fee-for-service basis for nonprofits and schools and corporate and any agency that wants an innovative team-building dialogue experience around cooking. And we sell the produce that we grow. We rent out our kitchen and we have the cafe, and we also do Breaking Bread does catering. So we have those five lines of business.
Wow. So you're not just dependent on donations for your revenue. You have some streams of revenue that are coming in then.
Correct. Yep. We're about 30% and 35% earned revenue. Our goal is to get to 50% earned revenue by 2020.
Right. So you've been on this journey, Michelle. So you went from you know, you had this sort of social justice background, you had this food background, and you show up in Minneapolis as a new mom, and somehow you've built this into this large, complex organization. So I'm sure that you have learned a lot of lessons along the way. For people who are early stage or aspiring social entrepreneurs, what's a key piece of advice or something that you've learned on your journey that you would pass on to others?
There's so many that I would pass on. I guess, especially folks that are interested in social enterprise and starting something from scratch, I would say Like the more you can absorb and learn, like think about it as like you're taking a class, a semester long class, even though you're not in class, but just like grab any resources that you can off the internet, through Social Enterprise Alliance, any resources, Social Impact Hub here in the Twin Cities, but any resources that you can meet people and gain knowledge. Because the more you know, I think the better and more informed choices you can make. There's no right path. There's no one way to do it. And so I think it really depends on what your industry is, what you're interested in, what you're passionate about, and then just getting out there and meeting and talking to as many people and reading and learning as much as you can.
And if people are looking for Appetite for Change online or on social media, where would they look?
Our website is www.afcmn.org. That's like Appetite for Change Minnesota, but afcmn.org. And then Appetite for Change on Facebook, AFCMN on Twitter. I think our Instagram is Appetite for Change. And I think we're on Snapchat now too. We have a really cool viral music video that our youth did called Grow Food. It's been seen over 10 million times on the internet across all the different platforms, but that's on YouTube. It's called Grow Food. It's amazing.
I'll make sure I put a link in the show notes for all that. So
yeah.
So for, if people have been listening to you and me for the last 20 or 30 minutes or so, what's something you would love to see them go and do as a result of this conversation?
Well, there's a long list, but I guess I'd break it up. If you're in the Twin Cities metro area or anywhere close or driving through the Twin Cities, come stop at Breaking Bread Cafe. We serve breakfast and lunch, breakfast all day. We have the Minnesota award-winning grits. It's a comfort food with a international flavor twist. It's just really down home cooking, everything made from scratch. It's delicious. So come by. We also have catering, so you can go to our website. There's a link from AFC, but breakingbreadfood.com is also the website for the cafe, and you can order catering. If you're not in the Twin Cities, I would say we'd love for you to donate. We are trying to grow more individual donors so that we don't have to rely as much on foundation and corporate grants. So any amount counts. $1, we'll take it. And also think about getting involved in a local food or food justice effort in your city or town. Foodpolicyaction.org is a great resource if you're interested in legislation. The farm bill's coming up in 2018. There's lots of different scary things that are going to be impacting our food system, climate change, all of that. So I would encourage you to get informed and just search food justice on Google. If that's the only thing you do, search food justice on Google.
That's great. Well, Michelle, thanks so much for being with us on Social Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Tony, so much for having me. It's an honor to be here. And thank you to all the social entrepreneurs out there listening for all the work that you do.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we produce Social Entrepreneur every Monday. You can find the show notes, bonus material, and more at tonyloyd.com. That's TonyLoyd.com. And while you're at it, will you do me a favor? Subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. It really helps others to find these stories of changemakers who are making a difference in the world. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining me today. And until next time, please remember to use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.